You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories, and of course the stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, business coach at Draw In Customers Business Coaching and author of the Bold Business Book, available on Amazon. Today, we are welcoming slash preparing to learn from Nate Warnke of Rockhound Brewing Company. Nate, how are you feeling today?
I'm doing great, James. Thanks for having me on.
I got to tell you, anytime a guy shows up in the radio station with beer, I'm alert. I'm a happy man.
It's a good start.
So why don't you tell us what is Rockhound Brewing Company?
Yeah, Rockhound is it's a brew pub. It's 2 years old. Mm-hmm. So the official definition is a brew pub is kind of a hybrid between a restaurant and a brewery. So we have a small brewing facility on site and a full-scale restaurant, and it's on the near west side of Madison.
Sure. So how did you get into this?
Well, my default answer used to be insanity, and now I call it stupidity. No, I nice. Yeah, it was a kind of a long-term scenario of me thinking about it for years and years. Mm-hmm. I was homebrewing. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with that. It was just a hobby. And then these long thoughts of what if kind of popped into my head for years and years. And I'm sure you'll go into some of the questions about the longer version, but the short version is I was in the corporate world for 12 years.
Okay.
Decided at the age of 37 I had to do something more with my life. If I wanted to try something myself, my own business, it was now or never, because if I screwed the whole thing up, I had years to fix it.
You still got time to recover.
Right, yeah, exactly. So I left the corporate world and decided to give this a shot.
Nice.
And then that's the rest is history. So we opened 2 years ago.
All right. And are things going okay?
Yeah, 2 years in, there's plenty to discuss. The first 2 years.
We'll get it all.
Oh, yeah, you'll get it all. The first 2 years are quite interesting for restaurants and breweries these days. But it was it's finally you can see the lights at the end of the tunnel now.
Nice.
Finally, after 2 years, you can kind of see things coming your way that are really good things. But there's a lot of building.
Right. Yeah. Well, I bet it's certainly not a light switch. You just turn around and
I wish it was.
Send the trucks loads of money.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us about? Are you married?
I am married. No kids.
No kids. Yeah. Okay. So you've been married for longer than 2 years.
Yeah, married for 11 this week, actually.
So there was a time that you and your wife had to have a conversation where you're like, hey, honey, funny story.
Right.
I'm thinking about quitting my job and starting this brew pub. What was her reaction?
It was a lot of long conversations. So it wasn't just one, right?
Okay.
But there was multiple conversations.
You just laid the breadcrumbs down.
It was she knew I was more of a business person and wanted to get into business as opposed to sit in the corporate world my entire life.
Sure.
As much as I actually enjoyed where I worked, it just didn't seem like I wanted to sit there for the next 30 years.
Sure, fair.
So she knew that, and she is actually very encouraging of what I was trying to do. And I honestly appreciate that. She and I knew that there had to be certain things we had to sacrifice and certain things we had to do. And certain sacrifices that she would have to make as the only breadwinner at this point, to do it. But at the end of the day, she was actually quite an encouragement. She was the catalyst that got me homebrewing in the first place.
Nice,
actually.
So very cool. So how long were you homebrewing before you got into the official business?
Yeah, about 9 years. So,
oh, wow.
Actually 9 years before I left my job, 11 years before I opened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So plenty long.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So tell me, why didn't you start a brewery versus getting into the restaurant business as well? Are there challenges? I know there's like a gazillion crazy laws in Wisconsin, so...
Yeah,
imagine that's part of it. I don't know.
That is part of it, and I think the other part was really just the business plan. I looked at the distribution route from a business planning standpoint, and I looked at this brew pub route from a business planning standpoint. And in my book, the brew pub route with the full restaurant had probably a better viability in today's market.
Gotcha.
It's a little harder to start up. The idea that I would lay out there in front of people when they would ask that kind of thing was that, hey, go to any liquor store. Go to some of the bigger liquor stores. And I always use Woodman's as an example because they've got a very large...
Huge liquor store.
Huge liquor store, big craft beer selection. I said, go to Woodman's and go to the craft beer aisles.
All right.
Now, they're getting bigger, but at one point, there's shelves and there's shelves and they keep adding on shelves and they keep adding on shelves. Walk down that craft beer... Even 4 years ago, when I was just thinking about this,
Oh, right.
You walk down that craft beer aisle, And there's just bottle after bottle after bottle after name after bottle after name.
Insane.
And you just, you know, you see all these ones. You see the ones you know, the ones you don't know, the ones you've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's competing for that very limited shelf space.
Sure.
In-state, out-of-state, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it from a perspective of, okay, for now,
mm-hmm.
you know, you never say never on anything. I've said
sure.
that and screwed that up, right?
Right, right.
But,
we all
but yeah, you never say never. But I said, for now, this is what I want to do. I'm going to start a restaurant in the neighborhood that I live in.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have a brewery in it, and I'm going to brew the beer and hire an assistant brewer to help me out.
Nice.
And I think that's going to be the way to go. And I think that was a more sustainable scenario as opposed to a distribution brewery where I'm
sure.
running around trying to hoof bottles to,
gotcha.
To other bars and
okay.
And liquor stores. So that was kind of the impetus for it, is that there's so much competition
sure.
in the market at that point for shelf space.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's even worse. I mean, the competition
right.
for shelf space is just getting...
Worse or better, right?
Well, right, yeah. It's a phenomenal time to be a consumer.
Sure.
I mean, craft beer consumers have it better than they've ever had it
oh, yeah.
in our lifetimes. And there's just that, you know, shelf space keeps getting more and more packed. They start taking six packs and turning them the short way, the
right,
sideways way.
Right.
So, yeah. So that means the distributors and the beer companies are paying to put their six packs out front as opposed
mm-hmm.
to tucked in the corner.
You have to come up with more clever names.
Right. The clever names, the good branding and marketing. And,
sure.
and branding and marketing is a big deal,
mm-hmm.
Especially in packaging.
Sure.
And it works out really well for some folks. And some of the people that make really, really good beer out there sometimes get lost. And they're
sure.
just, you know, scraping as much as they can together to keep things moving.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah. But, you know, the brew pub scenario for me was really... as much as it's also has its own complexities,
mm-hmm.
it was the right route.
Sure.
For me, it was the right way to go. It
okay.
was, but a little bit of insanity because there's a full restaurant attached to it as well. But
yeah, just restaurant alone. Anytime you say that with a small business, I'm like, are
right,
you sure?
Right. Yeah. That's my neighbor actually owns a small cafe,
mm-hmm.
and he. This is not an anecdote that he made up, but he likes to use it the simple, like, how do you make $5 million? Or how do you make $1 million in the restaurant business?
All right.
You start with $5 million, right? So his idea, he's got a cafe, and he's very sour on it all the time. He said, I tried to warn you.
Right.
So he said, you did it anyways. I said, yep, I sure did.
You know, I tell you, I was told, I worked in a movie theater for longer than I should have.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the manager telling me, we're in the business of entertainment.
That's true.
The people that go to, like, you get dinner in a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
We get the people after they've already been fed and happy. The people at the restaurants, he says, never open a restaurant because they're tired. They just got done with work. They're cranky. And it's the restaurant's job to put them in that better mood to prepare them for the movie.
Yes.
So he says, we get them when they're already happy in the restaurant. You got to deal with tired, cranky kids, all kinds of stuff where it's just on the verge of overwhelming. Like there's some people you're just not going to be able to make happy.
Yes.
My 4-year-old kid gets hangry, and that's even us in our house. I can only imagine at a restaurant. Other people get hungry, angry.
Yeah, yep, yep. Oh,
and then they go off and write reviews about, oh, my goodness gracious, they didn't wait on me hand and foot or whatever.
Yeah, I, you know, that's you're absolutely right on all of that, all
mm-hmm.
of those points. And one, yes, we are in the entertainment industry, even at a restaurant. You know,
right.
you're always on show. You're putting mm-hmm. on a show at
mm-hmm.
a restaurant, and that show is service, food, and drinks.
Right.
In a restaurant. And,
mm-hmm.
and if people don't like one of the three, particularly the service,
right?
You know, you
got a problem.
You fail, right?
Yep.
In that customer's mind, in that
right.
guest's perspective,
mm-hmm.
They come in for, you know, whether they consciously think it or not, they come in for the service,
right?
And you know, so they say, "Oh, I'm coming here for the beer because I'm a brew pub, right?
Sure.
I'm coming here for the beer," but you know, in a conscious way, they say that subconsciously. They're there for the service. They're
mm-hmm.
they're there to get waited on hand and foot, right?
Sure.
Just like any cranky little kid or
right.
or even a hangry adult. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can get done with your work day and you're like, gosh, I just need a drink or
right.
I just need some appetizers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they come in there. If they're hangry, my staff recognizes it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just a, oh boy, here we go.
Get this guy some food.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's you know, this person needs a drink, and this person
right.
needs some food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're putting on entertainment, you're putting on a show, and we're always conscious that a friendly face is very important, no matter how frazzled we are. And
sure.
we've ended up frazzled, but there's plenty of people. And then you go into the scenario where it doesn't go well.
Right.
Even if you do everything right,
mm-hmm.
sometimes things don't go well.
Sure.
You end up with a bad review.
Right.
Sometimes you make a mistake. You
mm-hmm.
end up with a bad review or a
sure.
mediocre review. And the first, I would say the first few months, those are hard to stomach.
Oh, I bet.
You know, because you just threw all this money out there.
Your heart and soul
into
it.
Your money's on the line. Mm-hmm. Everything's out there.
This guy wet his pants because his water glass was only half full.
Right, yeah. You don't even know what they're going to complain about. But you end up with a little complaint here, a little complaint there, and you take those very much personally.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a hard scenario to realize that sometimes you're just not going to win.
Sure.
You know, sometimes those folks are just not going to like what you're serving.
Right.
For the first 6 months or so, I took all of them very seriously.
Sure.
And I recognized that there was nothing I could do for some of them, but mm-hmm. I was very diplomatic and appreciative that people were giving feedback. And
mm-hmm.
But you end up with someone who was having a really bad day,
mm-hmm.
and you know those complaints can pile up pretty quickly on your shoulders, where mm-hmm. suddenly I'm carrying these complaints on my shoulders, or I'm going back to my staff. I'm like, what can we do, guys?
Right.
How are we going to fix this?
Sure.
So it's
sure. It's given the feedback you can take. I take this with the reviews on my book and stuff like that. You get good.
Exactly.
And you get bad. And, you know, it's as people telling you something that they were too shy to tell you to your face.
Right. Yes.
Or there wasn't an easy channel where reviews, you're telling the world instead of just me. But, you know, whatever. It's cool. And as long as you learn from it, if they give you a chance to fix it.
Right. And that's the key is sometimes, like I shouldn't say so, there's always something to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that one thing to learn is what I mentioned before, is you can't please everyone. And
right.
You know, you're not going to be the place for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's going to like someone else's beer better. Someone's going to like someone else's food better. Right.
Sure.
But there's always something to learn. And if there's a way to learn something from them, then that's worth the review. And it's mm-hmm. worth the feedback. And there's nothing more rewarding to me than when someone actually gives me the feedback in person and says, hey, I wasn't real happy with this, as opposed to going online and typing it on Yelp and Google, and suddenly they're on a pedestal.
Troll the world.
Yeah, that's what they do. And I'm sure that you've experienced it in your life too, with the book and anything else. But you know, that feedback in person of, this just doesn't work for me,
mm-hmm.
or this just didn't taste good, or you know, such and such was cold. You're like, oh, shoot, you know, I'm
that's
sorry.
That's beer. It's supposed to be.
Yeah, right, yeah. Okay, no, not the beer, the food usually. Yeah. So someone will say something was cold, and you just do everything you can to fix it. We've had everything from someone complaining that a very, very fresh brewed pot of coffee was cold.
Oh,
and
no.
A literally 5 minutes old pot of coffee.
Whoa.
In one of those crafts for restaurants. The stainless steel ones that's supposed to keep coffee hot, and it keeps it hot for half a day.
Sure.
It was 5 minutes old, and he said it was cold. So we're like, all right, just throw in the microwave, heat it up.
Yeah, right.
And I've received that once. And it was just, you know, everything from that to actual legitimate mistakes. You know,
mm-hmm.
Hey, I ordered this sandwich, and it was supposed to not come with this and not come with that. And you put the sauce on, and you weren't supposed to. So, you know, you get that. I prefer it in person.
Mm-hmm.
But you will get the online feedback, and that's, it's a big deal. It's sometimes fun to read, sometimes entertaining to read.
Right? They're like resumes, right?
So, yeah, sometimes it actually warms your heart to read mm-hmm. some of the reviews. They're so positive, and you know, they appreciate the hard work and effort you're mm-hmm. putting into things, even if there was one thing that wasn't to their liking, they at least say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of them are just kind of people who seem to have an axe to grind for no reason.
Sure. I never got quite hired as the restaurant critic, so now's my chance.
Right, yes. Yeah, that is a small portion of the population.
Right.
But they do exist out there.
But they're there, right?
They're there. Oh, yeah, you bet.
I always, like, I got the phone answering company, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always say, when somebody calls in to complain, you got to think, how bad was it for them to complain? But when somebody calls in to compliment one of our clients on, you know, one of their people, their employees doing something, I'm like, do you know how good they had to do that? For the person to pick up the phone and call to compliment.
That's right.
Like, that's above and beyond a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And a complaint is tough for people to call for.
Yes.
I'm like, that's insane how, and it's interesting, it kind of touches on society, right? It's much easier, we feel more compelled when it's a bad thing than when it's a positive
thing. That's correct, That's nothing new for any of us who are in business,
that's just
unfortunately.
Right?
But yeah, you do end up with people who feel that they just want to actually finally someone will say something positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people come in on our second or third visit, and I remember one incident in one example specifically where you get all this negative feedback, and sometimes mm-hmm. people will come in and tell you negative feedback, or they'll put it online or whatnot. And every once in a while you get someone who comes in and they'll kind of seek you out. They'll, you know, some people don't know who I am. They don't necessarily have to. I don't care if they don't know my face.
Right.
And they'll say, hey, are you a manager here? Mm-hmm. And I'll say, well, I'm the owner. What can I do for you?
Yeah.
And usually I'm steeling myself, getting prepared for the, right? Well, this was terrible and this mm-hmm. sucked and this was right, bad, right? Right? And then every once in a while, and just a couple weeks ago, they said, hey, so-and-so is my waitress. Mm-hmm. And she did a phenomenal job. And I really appreciate that.
Right, right.
I said, you know, you did make sure that there are, you know, more people like that and mm-hmm. that work for you. I said, I really appreciate that. I said, she's worked for me since day one. So I think that's really good that she's doing so well.
Right, right.
So, yeah, you get this person that will seek you out to say something positive mm-hmm. is so rare in this society.
Right.
As opposed to people that will passive aggressively go online and right, tell you everything you did wrong, right. even though it's not their money on the table.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting. Reviews can have a huge effect. But enough of the people. Let's shift into business here.
Sure.
Tell me, there had to be a big nut to lay down money for the building, the restaurant, the brew pub, I mean, the tanks and stuff like that.
Sure, yeah.
Was it tough to get funding?
That's a fun little story. People do, yeah, it's absolutely difficult to get funding.
Okay.
I think it's getting harder these days than it was for me. I mean,
essentially,
two and a half
you
years
weren't
ago.
Software, so you couldn't be like, look, this will balloon out.
Right, yeah, you can't start real small you know, like that way. So, what for funding, what I did is I put together a business plan.
Okay.
And I, you know, everybody says, oh, yeah, write a business plan. And some people write 5 pages, some people write
sure.
2 pages.
Mm-hmm.
My first draft was 20 something pages long.
Sure, okay.
Right? So, and I put some pro forma or some numbers in there and
right.
ran it by a couple people and I started talking to people
mm-hmm.
and to get the money, I knew I had to have a robust business plan that really conveyed my idea,
right?
But also showed I knew what the heck I was talking about.
There's that, yeah.
To say I know that this can break even and
sure.
hopefully make me a small salary on the side,
right?
Right. That's
well,
that's,
okay,
you know,
that's
you
the
know,
dream. A
the
small
dream.
Salary.
A small salary on the side. Right. No, that eventually it will make a profit,
sure.
and I will be able to really reap right. the benefits, reap the rewards.
Who's that guy in the rusty Honda?
Yeah,
that's Nate.
That's right. So it, yeah, the bottom line is at the end of running this by a lawyer and a couple of bankers and
sure.
a real estate agent, I ended up with a 39-page business plan.
Okay.
So which is decent, you know.
Yeah,
This is a small company.
10 years ago, I would have been surprised, but now that I teach a business planning class, I'm
correct,
like, you're good.
But I'm still surprised because people don't realize how much you have to put in a business plan.
Oh yeah.
There's a full
fair.
Market analysis, a competitive analysis. Yeah. There's I think 10 or 12 pages of appendix.
Sure.
The appendices are just. It's just numbers
mm-hmm.
and additional documentation that proves the numbers and why
sure.
this restaurant and brew pub is going to
yep.
work in its location.
That's it. You said it perfectly, right? Prove that it'll work.
Prove that it'll work, right.
Yep.
You say that, you know, you can't just say, I'm going to make $1 million a year.
Trust
you
me,
say,
it's all good.
How are you going to make $1 million
mm-hmm.
a year? Prove to me that this is worth $1 million a year kind
mm-hmm.
of thing, right? And this is, you know, that's gross revenue, right?
Right.
So revenue-wise, a restaurant, if it doesn't make $1 million a year, you're
right.
going to be in trouble.
Sure.
That's
yep.
restaurant. That's people say, $1 million? No. It's
no,
just
it's cash flow.
Cash
right?
flow. It's just cash
money
in the door of the
out.
Restaurant,
yep.
right? Money in, money out. Lots of restaurants make $2, $3, $4, $5 million a year.
Sure.
But if you don't make $1 million at my size, you're going to be in trouble.
Sure.
So, you know, you put that all together and you start shopping out to banks.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at my notes before I showed up here and I went to and I had conversation with 17 banks.
Wow. All right.
So 17 banks. Some of them were brief phone conversations.
Sure.
12 of them were serious conversations.
Okay. Well.
Very serious conversations that multiple phone calls, meeting with a banker in person. And then some of them would still say, you know, I just can't see this working for
sure.
us.
But mm-hmm.
but what was really encouraging is that even if they said no, it was a really cool soft no.
Okay.
So they'd say, hey, I know you're going to get your money.
Sure.
I'm positive of that.
It's
just
not
our, yeah, it's just not our bank.
Sure.
Our bank doesn't do this kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a great plan. I said, that's awesome. And
sure.
that's what you know, pumps you up. That's what feeds your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I applied at 4 banks.
Mm, okay.
And I ended up with 3 offers.
Oh, wow.
Which is huge for any restaurant.
Is,
right.
It's phenomenal.
So instead of, you know, it's me begging for money. And then
right.
suddenly I'm looking at 3 offers going, all right.
I get a choice.
Yes, I get a choice. I get to go, okay, which one makes the most sense?
Sure.
So I picked the right bank to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I had to come up with some of my own cash
okay.
as required because it was a small business administration
right.
loan or SBA. And I had to come up with some of my own cash.
Sure.
And I'd been building that up for 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I said, well, that's still not going to be quite enough.
Right.
So I went to a couple of smaller nonprofit entities.
Okay.
WIBIC,
yep.
Wisconsin Women's Business Interest Corporation, and Madison Development Corporation.
Yep.
And they will give you money if you can prove you're creating jobs, sure. have a good business plan. Mm-hmm. And on my side of things, I also got co-signers for those loans.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So I started shopping out my business plan for private loans and co-signing.
Oh,
so okay. at the end of the day, I ended up with, I think it's 6 private loans. They're relatively small. These are people that could afford my minimum.
Sure.
We're not talking millionaires, right?
Sure.
We're just talking people. Some are friends and family.
Okay. Yep.
6 private loans. Those 2 nonprofits that required at the time 5 co-signers.
Okay.
To co-sign a portion of the loan.
Wow.
Plus,
each, could it be the same co-signers for each one?
It could, but they're putting more on the line then, because sure. they're basically putting collateral on the line for me, because
right,
I ran out
right.
of collateral. Right. The bank has all the collateral.
Yep.
I'm out of collateral by the time I get to these nonprofit
sure.
loans. So now I have friends and family putting in collateral for me. So that took some gumption on their part.
Sure. So kids, if you're listening at home,
yeah.
this is why you can bring in $1 million,
right.
but you're not making $1 million.
No. Right. So you got, you know, so I've got.
We haven't even touched on rent or employees yet.
Correct. Right. So I got 5 nonprofits, 6 personal loans, which mm-hmm. are, you know, private loans that I had to do, plus the main bank. When the main bank had, I think, 70%.
Sure.
Of what I had. So then I had to come up with my own money to make sure that it was all, mm-hmm. you know, in a nice little package. So it was actually a lot of very creative financing.
Dang, sure. Okay.
I guess the one thing that somewhat surprises people is that through all of that,
mm-hmm.
I have no partners and nobody else with equity stake. I own 100%. For better or worse.
Sure. Right.
Right. You know,
right.
So, you know, from a liability standpoint, for worse.
You get to jump off that cliff alone.
Right. You know, so yeah. technically by law, my wife owns too. Right?
Sure.
So
right,
as a husband-wife pair, we own mm-hmm. 100% of Rockhound.
Sure.
So that means when the rewards show up,
mm-hmm.
after I pay off all my loans and all sure. the interest and all the debt,
yep.
it's all mine.
Sure.
I don't have to fight with anybody over
right,
who
right.
owns what portion or who worked harder.
Mm-hmm.
It's all mine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with having a business partner when you know what you're getting into.
Right.
For me, it was not the personal right choice.
Fair.
I was not
totally
looking
fair.
For equity partners or equity stake.
Right.
So that's why I sat down with my lawyer
mm-hmm.
and he came up with these creative financing ideas that were all
sure.
perfectly legal to get
mm-hmm.
me these nonprofit loans, to get me these private loans. That did not have any equity stake or profit share.
Sure.
So it's really kind of a neat little scenario.
Nice. Very cool. So what have you learned in the couple of years of running it? I imagine that's a long list, but let's say.
Hey, I'll say, where do you want to start?
Top that's few things, right? Let's start with the first thing you learned that was probably prevented you from really growing, because in the alcohol area, because I know
yeah.
that can be a touchy subject.
Yeah.
From a legal standpoint, there's laws that date back way back when that are outdated.
Yeah, there's a kind of a mishmash of laws. It's really it's ugly.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things that have been cleaned up, but I guess from the alcohol law standpoint, what did I learn there? I learned a lot of it before I went into it, which is why I became a brew pub. And from a legal standpoint, I'm a brew pub, which
mm-hmm.
is different legally from a brewery.
Oh, interesting.
In
okay.
some states, are the same thing. It's just
sure.
a small brewery.
Mm-hmm.
But in Wisconsin, they are distinctly different.
Sure.
And as a brew pub with a specifically small production,
mm-hmm.
Which I'll never meet that production limit at the rate I'm going. It's
okay.
it's big enough that it's not a big deal for me.
Okay.
Currently, right. We could expand.
Sure.
I am allowed to have a liquor license, which means I have wine and hard liquor too.
Gotcha. Okay.
A new brewery starting up is not allowed to have a liquor license in their tap room.
Okay.
So they're not allowed to serve wine and alcohol, hard liquor.
Okay.
Now there's a little bit of a weird quirk that apparently the wine might be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's fights back and forth about whether it is or isn't.
Sure.
I don't know the details there, but
right.
I can do anything I want to from that perspective.
Okay.
But I did learn through that discussion as well that it's a hard conversation that I can't. I can do a lot of things, but what I can't do is I can't hire a different brewery to then brew my beer,
oh.
package it, sell it to a distributor, and sell it for me.
You cannot.
I cannot do that.
Interesting. Okay.
So I can package all the beer I want to
mm-hmm.
at my facility.
Mm-hmm.
I can sell all the beer I want to out of my facility. I
sure.
can even hire a distributor to run beer out of my facility.
Okay.
But I can't hire another brewery, like, let's say, Octopi up here
sure.
in Wanakee. They do a lot of that.
Yep.
I cannot hire Octopi to brew my beer, put it in cans,
okay.
and then try to run it through the liquor stores. I'm not legally allowed to do
that.
So
do they attach that to Rockhound, or they attach that to Nate?
They attach that to a brew pub. Anybody that's got a brew pub
okay.
license.
So could you start Rockhound Brewing to do
that? Legally, I had to have to change classifications. I can't actually have
you
two
can't
breweries.
Have both.
No, I can't have both.
Okay.
I'd have to legally change classifications to get my liquor license.
So what if you wanted to invest? No, I'm splitting hairs here, but I'm just
sure.
curious, right? Because I know a lot of people are thinking about doing this, right?
Yeah,
or
a lot.
Or thing... Like, I just see breweries, brew pubs popping up everywhere, and
mm-hmm.
I'm like, there must be a market there. presume, or people hope there is, you know, because they're popping up like everywhere.
Yes, yes.
Even beyond Wisconsin, you go anywhere and they're like nationwide. I'm sure maybe worldwide, I don't know, but certainly nationwide. Any time that I go to a different city, people, there's other breweries and brew pubs. So I wonder, could you invest in an existing brewery like some of the other, your other investors invested in you, or is there something to stop them in investing in a brewery?
There are various laws out there, and I certainly don't want to speak beyond my knowledge.
Sure, fair.
So, but there are a lot of quirky laws that prevent me from doing investment in other breweries, owning other breweries.
That's crazy.
Maybe my investors might get in trouble if they owned other breweries.
Sure.
I know that the brewing project up north.
Okay.
The owner of the brewing project is also part owner in something else, like a distributor or bar. It was a bar, right? He's got a great story where he was part owner of a bar, and he started a brewery, the brewing project.
Sure.
And I don't know all the details because again, I don't want to speak out of turn. So for all the lawyers out there, I'm sorry. Because I don't have a law degree. I've got a master's in business, not a law degree. Right. So for all of you who want to start a brewery, don't take everything I say with 100% accuracy.
Sure, right.
But he was not allowed to have ownership in his brewery, and this bar at the same time because he had a brewery and a bar. They weren't the same thing. They weren't a brew pub. They were a brewery and a separate bar.
Mm-hmm.
So he did something. I think he gave up ownership stake of the bar and transferred it to a relative's name or something like that. And then there was some weird quirks of the law. He's trying to meet the requirements of the law.
Right.
And they still prevented him from owning his brewery. But now he owns his brewery, and I can't remember how, but he owns. But he's not allowed to work at it. So he's not allowed to pull wage or salary from his own brewery. Because, again, I don't know all the details, but it's a really ugly mess with this poor guy.
Right.
He's not allowed to, and he's on the board of directors of the Wisconsin Brewers Guild, right?
Oh, funny.
So he's like, how do we not understand the law? You know, this is, it's so convoluted and so complex and so messed up that he, you know, he doesn't know the law well enough.
Just a squirrel trying to get a nut.
Right. He's just like, I want a bar. I want to start a brewery. This is a great idea. Mm-hmm. You know, and so they've worked out some of that, right? He has ownership stake in the brewery, or someone in his family does this, but he's not allowed to work there. I don't know what the deal is, you know. But the laws are so quirky that once you try to step outside the box you've put yourself in, you're opening up a whole world of hurt potentially, and it's just ugly.
Sure,
I just hate that idea. It drives me insane.
All right,
but yeah, there's a lot of lawyers out there because of that. Yeah, they'll be happy to sit down with you and charge you $300 an hour to tell you what you can and can't do. But I've got a lot of lawyer friends, and the one piece of advice I'll give to anybody trying to do this is if you want to sit down with a lawyer, just bring beer, and sometimes the legal advice is free.
There's a little discount there. People helping you move.
That worked for me. I've done it more than once. Nice. Sat down with a lawyer with some beer and gotten, I think, $600 or $700 worth of free legal advice over a couple of beers.
Well, worth it.
Yeah, but that's have to have one because it's so convoluted. I can't just say, well, I could open another Rockhound brew pub.
Okay.
I can open up to six of those.
Oh, wow.
So think of Great Dane, right? Great Dane and Brewing here in Madison.
Sure.
They've got four or five, something like that at this point. Mm-hmm. They've got one more available. You can open up to six by law.
And then they're capped. That's so crazy.
And so is their production. Their production is capped at, I think it's 10,000 barrels a year.
Okay.
Before they're considered not a brew pub.
Sure.
And then they, you know, their distribution and network and that kind of stuff. It's all, again, goofy laws. I'm so far below that it doesn't matter to me yet, so I'm trying to ignore those laws.
Sure. Well, just pay attention to what matters now.
Right, yeah. How do I sell as much beer from my little facility?
Mm-hmm.
It's not in my best interest or my interest at all to have a second location.
Sure.
But if I did, then I'd have to say, well, what other convoluted laws out there that help prevent that, and what can and I can't do, and what it just gets ugly.
Sure, I get it.
Yeah.
So what else have you learned outside of the whole alcohol area, just from starting a restaurant alone? Had to be a big deal.
Yeah, the restaurant is a big deal. 55% of my revenue comes from food.
Okay.
So you say, oh, he owns a brewery and a brew pub, right? So that means he's selling a lot of beer. Well, actually, that's not true. I sell
that
more
lines up
food.
With what I would expect, I guess.
Yeah, for a restaurant, sure.
Sure.
But as a brew pub, I would expect to sell a little bit more on the beer side.
Sure.
Now, remember, I also have hard liquor,
too.
What
did the plan say?
The plan said 55% alcohol.
So. Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So it was exactly the opposite.
That. Okay.
Yeah, it just swapped on, you know, realities, it swapped.
Sure.
It's 55% food, plus or minus, and something like 5 or 6 or now I think it's 7% other alcohol or liquor.
Okay. Sure.
You know, and the rest is beer. So it's, you know, you run around 40% beer.
All right.
My beer. So what I learned is that the restaurant industry is extremely competitive and cutthroat.
Oh, I bet.
Particularly in Madison.
Oh.
There are so many restaurants in Madison. And in the restaurant world, as I was basically building, like physically building the, the location, the landscape was shifting under my feet.
Okay.
Where there were more restaurants revamping or opening in the 2 years that I started from, you know, business plan 2 years before opening.
Sure.
2.5 years before opening to finally opening, more restaurants opened in Madison and new places. And Madison's a very, I'm trying to come up with the right word without insulting any of my clients or my customers.
You got trolls waiting by the
keyboard. Oh, I know, they're right there. Madison's some of the Madison clientele can be restaurant goers, can be a little fickle.
Sure.
They can be very, very, they can have very high expectations.
Well, they have so many choices.
And you know, that's exactly what I was going to add. Rightfully so. And I did not realize this going into it.
Okay.
That, you know, I'm picky when I go to restaurants, but I'm not nearly as picky as some of the people that have come into my place. So it's, it's kind of a rude awakening. But the restaurant, as I'm trying to build here, the restaurant industry is exploding.
Okay.
Here in Madison. It's just absolutely going through the roof. And it's
in regards to number of restaurants,
just number of restaurants and then revamping of places and relaunches of places that have closed down.
Sure.
And it still is, there's still more and more and more places opening, and Madison has a fantastic restaurant community.
Sure.
But you've also seen the dark side of that where people are closing too. Some of the favorites have closed.
Oh my gosh. You've seen them closing all the time.
Right. Some were open 6-8 months and couldn't recover from a, you know, a disaster of some sort of proportion.
Right.
And the Madison food going community can be selective, and I'm not going to blame them because they got great choices, and, and you see that back to the previous conversation about reviews. You see, well, so many places to go to a different one, they're all better, you know. It's got, those are the ones that hurt a little bit, but I'm 2 years in, I'm kind of over those, you know. It's like, yeah, I get it, you're not, I'm not gonna be for everyone. I'm finally at the point where I can accept that, but I did not realize just how competitive the restaurant industry here in Madison was. You're competing with places like Food Fight, which do a phenomenal job. 19 places right now.
That's quite a few.
They do a phenomenal job of opening and marketing different tastes, right? So their tagline is, I shouldn't be advertising for them right now, right? A place for every taste, right? That's their big tagline. And they're true. It's true. I've gone to plenty of Food Fight restaurants. I give gift cards to my staff to Food Fight restaurants. Go check it out.
Do you really?
Yeah, sure. It's like, here's a reward. Go to Food Fight restaurants.
I suppose in the end, it's education, right?
It's that's exactly it. Food Fight has a big business entity, so if one restaurant isn't doing well, they can say, well, we need cash. All right, well, we've got cash over here. Let's shovel some cash to the right. Let's shovel some cash to the left.
Right.
They can pump cash into a restaurant until it does well. I'm a single owner guy who spent some time in the corporate world.
Right.
Did not start out a millionaire.
Right.
Right. So I, you know,
you didn't have the $5 million to
start. I didn't have the $5 million to start, so I had to borrow all this money, and I'm running on a shoestring budget.
Sure.
And my big thing, and this has been discussed publicly by other places in town too that are small and independent, is like, am I going to make next week's payroll?
Oh,
right.
Well, so that's a thing for every small business at some point,
right? Yeah, at some point it's for every small business. But in the restaurant world, I've heard horror stories.
Sure.
Of I've had people literally walk in the door and say, hey, do you got any jobs available? I said, yeah, where are you working now? He says, well, I used to work over at such and such a place, but then my paycheck bounced, so I'm out.
Gotcha.
And I said, all right, so note to yourself. Never, ever, ever do that.
No.
Right?
Big no-no.
Boom. Not going to touch that. Right. So I'm very, very careful about that. And I'm my cash flow is stable enough to not have to worry about that too much. It's it's a money shell game still, right?
Oh,
it's like,
definitely.
Well, I'll move a little over here and then I can do that. And then I move a little here and do that. Take care of these folks. Take care of these folks. But staff is, I think, number one or two on my list. The other one is usually taxes.
Right.
Yeah. You don't pay your sales tax, they shut you down.
Yeah, that's a bad day.
So right. So staff and tax are always right up there, number one.
Yep.
And number two, and then you got to pay your vendors because you just can't stay open.
Yep.
Without paying your vendors.
Yep.
And then you just kind of work your way down the list. But the staff is always number one, and that's
sure.
But that's it's so competitive. I did not believe how competitive the restaurant industry here in Madison was until basically my door was open.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So that leads me to the next question here. What has been some of the or what is the biggest challenge that you had to overcome? Presuming there's just one.
Right? Yeah, well, right. Yeah, you now I'm stopped. Right, it's like the biggest challenge.
Right.
Where do you want to go with that, James?
I hear like employees, or was it dealing with the city of Madison because that's a thing, or just firing up the restaurant marketing wise? Or
The city and I get along real well, which is good news.
Okay.
I'm one of the more forthright people that goes to the city of Madison. So that was never a problem. But I would say the biggest challenge was really understanding the kitchen aspect of things.
Gotcha. And just flow, how things work, or how things
should
work?
Just understanding that, you know, putting it in polite terms, that the kitchen was a pain in the butt.
Sure, fair.
that you know, I was not signing up to, in my mind, to run a commercial kitchen. Okay.
Oops.
Right. I was signing up to have one. I was signing up to have a manager run one.
Right.
I have two managers. I have a house manager.
Okay.
And I have a kitchen manager, chef, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I did not recognize, I did not understand, again, back to the competitiveness of the restaurant industry, how amazingly cutthroat the kitchen community in Madison was.
Oh.
And I'm not talking about the other chefs or restaurants in town trying to steal. I mean, they joke about that. Like, oh, I'm stealing employees or you're stealing my employees.
Sure.
But just the employees themselves, how they can be very, very loyal.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can be very, very disloyal from a standpoint of sometimes they'll leave you for a nickel raise and never tell you about that.
Oh, interesting.
And you can treat them with the utmost respect.
Sure.
You can treat them, you know, like, you know, you give them the hours they want. You give them the schedule they want. Like, you know what? I don't want to work here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger issue is, and again, for any of my current employees that actually listen to this, I love all of you guys. I promise. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't actually tell you this. They'll just not show up.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Right. And that's a thing, and every job's going to get that.
A frustrating thing.
So every job's going to get that.
Right.
If
you're a business owner, like, you wonder what the employees are thinking, right?
Right.
Like, and I assume when that happens, because that's happened with us, with interviews, with employees, it's just a thing. And I wonder, did I do something wrong?
Right. Yeah. Like,
where you're not comfortable telling me,
yeah,
I got to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you just left. No call, no show kind of thing. And, like, the show's got to go on, right? The world's
got to
keep moving. The restaurant's got to keep rolling. So we'll go on without you, and you'll probably find a job.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, you're not going to say, oh, I don't need the 2 weeks because I just walked out of my boss and I didn't tell him, right?
Right.
Presumably, they're not going to say that. But it's just, I wonder from a kindness thing. Look, man.
Courtesy.
A courtesy, right? You're not happy with where you're at. I get that. Life goes on. But that means that I probably made a mistake. And if I made a mistake, I should probably know about that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you just send me a letter and say, like, hey, I'm done. This is where you messed up.
Right.
That's the thing.
Text message.
Yeah. I mean, I'm saying lowest common, that'd be terrible to do that.
Yeah.
It'd be way better to do it in person, but it beats nothing.
A text message beats a lot of things. Yeah. Let's put it that way. Because, you know, we have them not show up and we'll text them and they just won't text back.
Yeah.
We'll call them and they just won't answer.
Is this how you break up with your spouse? One day I just got in the car and drove and kept driving.
Just kept driving. Well, I've heard of those stories too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's the surprise that I didn't understand is that, In other towns, other cities, or Madison, it's just based on contacts in the industry.
Sure.
Madison, 5, 6, 7 years ago, someone walked out on you, fine.
Sure.
You had four more people waiting in line. You had four more people like, yep, I'll work for you, no problem. Just let me clear up my old job here.
Different story now.
I'll be over. Now the unemployment rate is so low in Madison, 1%. Or less in some cases.
Yeah.
That we just end up with this big issue where they're just willing to jump for a quarter or you know, 10 cents, or just because that one's four blocks closer to my house, right? Whatever their excuse is, whatever the reason is.
And, just want something different.
Right. And, you know, and since I opened, my kitchen wages have gone up 30%.
Whoa, in 2 years.
In 2 years.
Oh.
Yeah. And I reward the people that do good work.
Sure.
Those who are there, or even those who have left on good terms, know that I do that. It's like, hey, you're doing a great job. Keep up the good work. Here's you know, here's a raise.
Right.
Here's what I want to see.
Right.
Before you can earn the next one, and we'll talk in another month or 3 months.
Sure.
You know, kind of
thing. So it's very structured.
Yeah. It's relatively loose. It's structured-ish. 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then try to do something around 90 days and just review them and decide if they're worth a raise or not. And, but it's just such a cutthroat industry. You know, I do have kitchen staff that have left on good terms and said, hey, I'm putting in my 2 weeks notice. I said, thank you for putting in your notice.
Holy cow.
I really appreciate that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually talked some of them out of it.
Nice.
You know, it's like, hey, well, sit down. What do you need?
That's awesome.
You know, I appreciate this, this, and this. What do you need to stay here?
Right.
And sometimes it's not a raise.
Right.
It's just like, well, I want to change these hours. I'm like, oh, well, why don't you just tell us?
Right.
We'll find someone else to work that day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't work Mondays? All right. You work Friday. We won't make you work Mondays anymore.
Sure.
Whatever it is.
Sure. Yeah. Solve it. Nate, I'll tell you, we got a roll here.
Yeah.
And I apologize for cutting this short, but I'll tell you what I want to do. Are you cool to come back here sometime?
Yeah, you bet. Absolutely.
I have about 75,000 more questions for you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's so, that's the
guy,
way
I mean, like, you did the dream. That's the whole thing. You're making beer for a living, so that's cool. So we want to find out all the answers.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we should definitely do that again and And that was partly my fault for being late, too.
So. No worries. No worries. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, especially with beer. Coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, business coach at Draw In Customers Business Coaching and author of the Bold Business Book, available on Amazon. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, and our guest, Nate Warnke of Rockhound Brewing Company. Just want to say, Nate, where are you located really quick?
444 South Park Street, right between St. Mary's and Meagher Hospitals.
Awesome. You can't miss it. Go there. Great food, great beer, and, of course, you can say hi to Nate, right?
Absolutely.
Ain't no thing. All good. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 6 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at the sunprairiemediacenter.com. We can also be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link on drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week. Stay awesome, and of course, enjoy your business.